Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast, powered by Consultant Connect. For the month of April, all our interviews with economic developers and site consultants will be solely focused on their reaction and response to the current coronavirus pandemic. We will be releasing these on a daily basis, and we hope you find value in each episode as we all fight for our communities. Today, Ron Kitchens talks with Rod Miller, CEO at Invest Puerto Rico, who shares his strategy to navigate through this crisis.
Hey, Rod. We talked earlier. I know your family is well, and it's an answer to prayers. Tell us how things are, you know, now in Puerto Rico, both with COVID, but you were already, fighting the rebuilding of Puerto Rico, and which kind of disappeared from the national media with all this crisis. Tell us what we ought to know about what you're facing.
Yeah, so Puerto Rico, of course, has faced numerous crises and challenges over the last 5 or 6 years, from the earthquakes and hurricanes to the financial challenges. But at this point, you know, there's a muscle memory around how to respond to crises, and that's kicked in. At this point, we've had over 500 cases of COVID-19, along with 23 deaths. But our governor was one of the first to really take proactive steps in shutting things down so that we could flatten the curve. And so whereas other markets, their initial response to it was one of what do we do now? Puerto Rico quickly said, we've been here before as it relates to confronting a disaster, and got on its heels really quickly to confront the crisis, as well as to figure out how do we move forward. That's not to say that the challenges aren't considerable, but Puerto Rico kind of knows how to respond to these challenges. So there's a few things that we've done. One is that we said, okay, we've got a problem here, and it's not just a Puerto Rico problem. It's a national and it's a global problem. What's Puerto Rico's role in actually becoming a solution? So as an economic development entity, you know, Invest Puerto Rico quickly said, we've got to kick in gear and figure out how do we provide some stability in terms of the local economy, but also figure out how we can be a solution to the national challenge.
That's interesting. It strikes me. We just did an interview with Quentin in New Orleans, you know, your former home, and his responses about that muscle memory. He didn't use those words, but it was that same concept of, hey, we're a place that gets it. We're used to doing it the hard way. And our people are reacting appropriately. And I think that's fascinating that that a lot of places in America have never been through these kind of crisis. How's it affecting your own organization and the work you all are doing on a daily basis?
Well, I mean, I think that's both strategically as well as tactically. Now, and I'll talk about strategically what that means. Strategically, we are a relatively new organization. We were set up by law in 2017, even though we actually started working in 2019 functioning. And our mission was very simple. It was to bring new jobs and investment to Puerto Rico. As we thought about, you know, how do we do that in a strategic way, we developed a promotional plan, which we rolled out in December of 2019. And that promotional plan said, we're going to focus on knowledge services, IT and software, creative and digital industries, business services, financial services, professional services. And the thinking was, about 48% of our economy currently is manufacturing, but we knew that globally, you know, manufacturing, especially in this hemisphere, was on the decline. And so we said we wanted to focus on sectors that were really knowledge-based, because we understood that the infrastructure demands of knowledge services were a lot less from an energy and a logistics perspective versus traditional manufacturing. And with this COVID-19, we actually realized that that was a smart way to focus, because part of the reality is remote working has kind of changed productivity and kind of expectations of what companies are saying they need to actually function. I know you talk to a lot of CEOs around the country, as do I, and what they're telling me is that they've not, especially when we're talking about white collar jobs, seen a decline in productivity. As a matter of fact, they're finding that their workforce is not only resilient and wants to work, but that in many cases, they're more productivity at home. So Invest Puerto Rico, we're saying, how do we actually become a hub for remote workers from around the globe? taking advantage of our cost of living differences versus a high cost market such as, you know, New York and California and other places. You know, the life of a computer programmer in San Juan is very different than the life of a computer program in Silicon Valley, per se. The other thing that we're doing from an organizational strategy perspective is, I mentioned 48% of our economy is manufacturing. Well, about half of that is pharmaceutical manufacturing. And unfortunately, this COVID-19 challenge really exposed gaps in the national supply chain in order to be able to confront challenges such as this. So we've got some excess capacity in our market. We've got 14 of the 20 largest pharma companies in the world here on the island. So we're trying to figure out, how do we actually become a part of the solution in making sure that the U.S. as a market has the access to the pharma capabilities that it needs in order to move forward. And then the last thing I think that this has done from a strategic perspective is it really allows us to underscore this message of resilience. When we think about Puerto Rico, if it's nothing else, it's definitely resilient. And so we said, you know, unfortunately, COVID-19 has demonstrated that there's really no market, there's really no business that's completely immune to outside risk. And these risks, I think, in the world that we face, we just don't know where they're coming from. And so companies want to be in a place where their workforce responds to these challenges actively and productively and moves forward. And so, for example, one of the figures that we found was that after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, about 40% of businesses, small businesses, didn't reopen. After Hurricane Maria here in Puerto Rico, only 10% of small businesses didn't reopen. And so what we're seeing is that this is a market that says, yes, stuff happens, but we've got to keep moving. And so that's been our approach to moving forward. Now, tactically, what does this mean? Because we can't fly all over the country and all over the world like we used to, we're trying to figure out, how do we create online virtual communities to talk about the issues that matter to our companies, the issues that matter to companies everywhere, whether it's issues of supply chain and pharma, or issues related to remote working, or whether it's questions around talent. So we're being very aggressive in leveraging digital platforms to create a sense of community. And so that's a significant tactical change. And then we're also figuring out, how do we create nodes in other markets to represent Puerto Rico? Currently, we've got an office in New York. We're opening an office in Silicon Valley, and we're actually getting ready to hire a representation in Europe. So we want to figure out, how are we everywhere and nowhere at the same time?
You're certainly have a better grasp of it and more aggressive than a lot of places we're talking to. How do you think economic development is going to be, the great places, the places that succeed and thrive 9 months and a year from now, what are they going to do different tomorrow than they did yesterday?
One of the things I think that this is pointing out, there is a period of recognition, of ownership, and those markets that are going to bounce back the quickest and the best are having that honest conversation with themselves right now that the reality of the global economy 6 months from now, a year from now, is going to be completely different. And if they're going to just stay the course, they're not going to be successful. There's a level of pain that comes with that, because so much of a community's identity, so much of a community's projections are tied up in strategies that have been developed over many years. But the communities that are going to be successful a year from now are starting to own already that it's a completely different world, and they're going to have to do things differently. The second thing that I think the communities that are going to change in terms of economic development a year from now is the remote working piece that I mentioned. I think companies are going to think very differently about their capital expenditures and physical infrastructure. So the real estate development opportunities, I think, are going to look dramatically different. And the way companies think about expansion is going to look dramatically different. So those smart organizations are going to say, what does this mean for us? Maybe we didn't have the commercial, the class A office space to play in a certain league, but we've got the talent to do it. And you know, and talent's been an ongoing discussion, I'd say, more aggressively, at least the last 5 or 10 years. I think the smart economic development organizations were already figuring out what their talent strategies look like, and I think the ones that are going to be successful in the future. And then the last thing I think I should make note of is, and I think this is negative overall, but it's a reality. I think globally, governments are going to become much more protectionist in terms of their trade policy. So companies are going to have to, communities are going to say, what does that really mean in terms of foreign direct investment to my market, what's that going to mean in terms of U.S. companies really considering coming back onshore, and how do we position ourselves for that inward investment? Because I think that protectionism is going to play out very strongly, especially in more developed markets like the U.S. and Europe.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with any of that. You know, there's one thing, though, that you talked about. Economic developers are struggling for a vocabulary. So when you talk about how it's recruiting individuals to bring their job with them from San Jose to San Juan, so from Silicon Valley to Puerto Rico, which is a great thing. We all want to do that. But most of the time, we don't have a way to capture it. So the Economic Development Corporation that's got to go to public sources for funding, you know, has got to prove that, you know, we slayed a dragon and brought home this prize. How do you do that? How do you communicate that strategy with elected appointed officials who, you know, are looking for new neon signs when you're filling, you know, if you filled 1,000 jobs, but they're all working from home? How do you tell that story? And I know you've thought about this because I know you think about these things. So how do you tell that story to ensure, and credit in the right word, but to ensure that people understand that strategy is working?
There are a few elements of this, and I think this is a really good question. One of the things that we were able to do in Detroit, fairly successful, and New Orleans, was, and I'm not going to call it lying, I'm going to say that we were able to present an optimistic future that got people really excited. And part of it is we've got to figure out, communities have to figure out how to tell this story and create buzz, even show momentum in a certain direction and create buzz even when the market isn't quite showing it yet. And so that's the job of economic developers, to create that sense of optimism about, well, so for example, when I was in New Orleans, I would tell companies that we were like TLC, that singing group from the 90s. They had an album out called Crazy Sexy Cool. And I said that Crazy Sexy Cool that people would find in New Orleans food and in New Orleans art, we would bring that to their companies and it would show up in terms of innovation. In Detroit, and this is something that people in Detroit, and I would agree with, did not really like, but a lot of entrepreneurs would say, there's this sense of just like, it's just open. There's just opportunity, and there's a grittiness and a griminess. Now, the reality is that grittiness and griminess was born out of pain. But for entrepreneurs, they saw that as an opportunity. And I think communities have to find out, what is that authentic story that creates that buzz and that momentum and get politicians to buy into it? That's number one. The second piece of this talent equation that's really critical is that the most developed markets are extraordinarily competitive from an education perspective, from an asset perspective. So that young, you know, engineer, you know, if he goes, he knows that if he goes to Boston or she goes to Boston or New York or Silicon Valley or Washington, D.C. or certain markets, the level of competition not only is high, there's also almost everything that's been done. It's hard to get recognized. I think for second-tier markets, the ability to be able to say, actually, your moving here actually matters. Someone's going to take note of you, small entrepreneur. And so being able to kind of craft that, no, we're just not like any other community. Your moving here actually matters, and we've actually got market momentum. But the third thing that I think is an essential element of this is to create platforms that make moving to the market turnkey for individuals. And so at Invest Puerto Rico, we're looking at developing platforms that provide information about everything from housing to schooling to how to find a job to how to work as a freelancer, creating those platforms so that it's not a difficult decision. Because if you come and you look out the window here and you see the beach and you see the mountains and you see the sunshine and you see the beautiful people, it makes it very easy to say, oh, yeah, I want to do that. But communities have to make that process as easy as possible. And then the last thing I think is when we think about talent strategies, talent attraction strategies, we tend to think about how do we market to individuals. And marketing to individuals is important. We leverage a variety of digital ad buys and things like that to figure out what the demographic is that aligns with our workforce needs. And we actually target those people in their homes when they're at home at night playing on their computer. They don't know, but we know who they are. And so taking advantage of those tools to be very specific about the kinds of talent that you attract. And this really is the last thing. It's not just the people, it's the companies. So we know which companies have large remote working populations. And being able to go to the leadership of those companies and say, yeah, you've got 60% of your population working remotely. You've got 70%. You've got 40% of your population working remotely. What would it take for you to make sure, for you to share with your employees the opportunities that it would look like to move to our community? What would it take for us to be able to provide you with the tools for you to be certain that you have the strategic partners and the ecosystem partners in our community in order for you to be outgoing successful? So that talent attraction strategy isn't just about targeting the people, but it's about communicating a message that's very clear to everyone about why that your market is different. And it's also about developing relationships with those sorts of companies.
Yeah, I think we've seen that bear out when we look at places like Tulsa, which I think for what they had 1,000 slots or something, at 10,000 or 100 slots, at 10,000 applicants who applied to live there for a relatively small incentive, but they wanted to come and be part of someplace that organically valued them, and they're all bringing their jobs with them.
That's absolutely right, and this is one of the. I'm going to say it's a good thing. I think that's coming out of COVID-19. We already saw a trend where millennials and whatever the groups are that are coming after our generation, they were already starting to make decisions based on where they wanted to live. I think, though, that across the spectrum, the reality that everyone is acceptable to these risks and challenges are making people rethink their values about where they want to live, how they want to live, who they want to live with. And this creates a real opportunity for markets that historically may not have been, you know, the top choice, because I think people are valuing different things, and we're going to continue to see that trend of people making different decisions about what they want for themselves and their families.
You know, Rod, I'm grateful that you're healthy, your family's good. You know, before we
Thank
got
you.
On, I got to see your kids bounce by, but the but the fact of the matter is I'm grateful you're my friend and grateful that you are a colleague in economic development who's making a real difference. And we've been friends a long time. And so stay well, stay safe, and go do great things. You're going to every day, and I so appreciate you.
Thank you. I enjoyed chatting with you. We'll be in touch.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Rod has really made a name for himself as an expert in navigating crises in economic development, and I'm so thankful that he was able to share his thoughts on the podcast today. Every weekday, we are releasing interviews to help economic development professionals learn how other communities are responding to the COVID-19 impacts. America's Jobs Team is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.